Welcome in, everybody. This is the Locked On Eagles podcast, a Monday edition of the show. It's a victory Monday edition of the show. The Eagles take down the New York Jets yesterday at Lincoln Financial Field, 31-6. I am Louis DiBiase, joining you as always alongside my co-host Gino Camilleri. Gino, how you feeling after we did the post-game show yesterday, and there were some things we want the offense to, you know, correct, but for the most part, I thought it was a pretty relaxing game. They were in control for four quarters. Now we get into the tough part of the schedule. How you feeling, you know, on Victory Monday?
Yeah, I feel good. I mean, it's great to be in first place, regardless
That's
of
right,
how that
Dallas
comes.
Lost.
Regardless if it comes against beating the Jets and Dallas beating a team that you just beat the week before, and Dak showing that he is Dak Prescott and Carson Wentz is just in a level above him. And I think we can all put that to rest by now. I think that discussion for you and I was just never a thing at all. And
oh, for me, it's been dead for like a year and a half.
Oh, yeah, quite some time. But you
or
see,
actually 2 years, right? I mean, because 2017,
oh, yeah.
2017 Wentz. Like even Dak Prescott in 2016, right? He had that big rookie year. It wasn't to like an MVP level that Wentz had the year after.
Absolutely not. And we don't need to get into this discussion. It's been had by many different people many different times. But the Eagles went out and beat a good Green Bay Packer team in Lambeau. They beat them with Davante Adams, and Dallas couldn't beat them in their own home without Davante Adams.
That's right.
I can't wait for that matchup in 2 weeks. That's really going to go and prove who the best in the NFC East is. But right now, we sit in first place. We got a matchup coming with the Minnesota Vikings, and we put in a good performance on Sunday. Yes, it wasn't perfect. Even Doug Peterson in his press conference today acknowledged that he would like the offense to do a little bit better. But the thing is, they still put up, 30-something points, and they didn't even put up their A game. So, yeah.
I mean,
31
I feel
points,
like,
and they played maybe a B-plus game, I said yesterday, maybe even a B game, B-minus even.
Well, it's impressive, too. Like, they're putting up points this year. For some of the mental errors, you still look at it. Regardless of how they're doing it, they've had 30-plus points in three of their five games. In the other two games, week two against the Falcons and week three against the Lions, they were in the 20s. So, I mean, this team is not – it's not like last year at the beginning of the season where you're heading into the fourth quarter and you only have 13, 17 points.
Yeah, without a doubt. And that's one thing that we really saw, especially after Carson re-injured himself, was that that offense was struggling. And you saw it. And the questions came in. Can they get the ball down the field? Is it something wrong with Carson? Can he really not push it down the field? Which now we know with that back injury, it went into his mechanics and that really played a role in it. But now you're seeing them just get back to the basics, let Carson be Carson, try to get him in a rhythm even with all these penalties. I know it's tough, but I still think Doug did a good job of getting the ball out of his hands. And yes, there were some throws he could have made. Yes, he could have thrown a couple of them away, especially that one he took the sack and his leg got beat up. I know
that was terrifying.
Brian Baldinger did a breakdown of that one. But yeah, that you can live and you can learn from all these things. And that's the great thing about this coaching staff is that they are going to hold everybody accountable, even when they do play games as well as they did yesterday and dominated a team like the Jets. Doug Peterson said it. He's going to hold people accountable. They're going to fix the offense. They're going to get it right. And I'm not worried at all. We saw what they did against a very good Packers defense the week prior on the road. Now you're going on the road again. I fully believe that this team can live up to the hype again. And if the defense and offense can click on the same page, which we haven't seen in one game yet, man, I'm excited to see what this Eagles team can do. They haven't even peaked for me, in my opinion. You still have to get DeSean Jackson back. Your corners are still going to get back. I feel like this team is only going to get stronger as this season goes on.
Speaking of the corners, speaking of DeSean Jackson, let's take a look at the injury report on Monday. Doug Peterson met with the media this morning. It sounds like Sidney Jones is expected to play against Minnesota this Sunday. He dressed for the game against the Jets, but they wanted to see if they could get through that game without having to force him in there against some speedy receivers like Robbie Anderson and Jamison Crowder. Considering the Eagles had such a favorable matchup that ended the way we expected throughout the week, they didn't need to force him out there as he continues to heal from a hamstring injury. So it's good that he got another week to recover, and now they're going to need him, though, Gino. They can't go into this one again with, to me, Craig James and Orlando Scandrick.
No way.
Although the Vikings, and we'll get into Vikings week, we'll get deeper into it on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. But with Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen at home, you need Sidney Jones at near 100%. So it's a good sign that Sidney Jones will be healthy, because we still don't know the status of Ronald Darby's hamstring injury. of Jalen Mills, of Craven LeBlanc, of Avante Maddox's week to week. So getting Sidney Jones back this week will be really big. And then for the offensive side of the football, DeSean Jackson expected to do more this week. They're hopeful he plays, but it seems like Dallas in 2 weeks is the worst case scenario. It sounds to me like he has a sports hernia that he's going to end up probably having to play through the entire season. But to me, Gino, me and you talked about yesterday when it comes to stretching the field, they need him, and he doesn't want to miss out on another run. He feels like to this day that he should have been on that 2017 Super Bowl team if it wasn't for Chip Kelly. So he's made his decision to not get surgery and to tough it out this year. So I think he might come back this week. I hope he does, but expect DeSean Jackson within the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, Doug said that it wasn't a sports hernia. He was asked directly if it was, and
but
somebody
with the tear,
asked him if
though,
he needed surgery. Yeah, I think it's
close
that's a
hernia.
To a hernia. Yeah, yeah, it's close. Yeah, I mean, I'm not a doctor, of course, but I'm sure they're trying to avoid surgery at all costs. And I don't think I think DeSean knows his body well enough at this point in his career. You know that he puts a lot into it. He talks about how much he trains in the offseason, does almost Olympic training like Olympic sprinters do. So yeah, he takes care of his body. So if he were to had to get surgery, I fully believe that he would have just gotten it the week and tried to come back as soon as possible. I fully believe that they can rehab him, get him at least to 85-90%, which is better than what they have to stretch the field currently, and get him back on the field. I believe Dallas should be the target. That's the big game you're aiming for. I believe that the defense can win you this game against Minnesota as long as you can get to Kirk Cousins. If you watched the game yesterday, even the Giants, who struggled to rush the passer, were all over Kirk Cousins. Mm-hmm. So if the front four can replicate what they did last week, I believe that your offense can do what they have done the past couple weeks without that field stretching element into Sean and make it by this Minnesota game. But to me, like you said, Dallas should be that point when they want to get him back, because he's got to be chomping at the bit to get in a Dallas Eagles.
Oh, I would imagine.
Game.
Yeah. He hasn't really been able to do that since 2013. And he's had some success, let's just say, against the Dallas Cowboys throughout his career, just in the NFC East too. Even when he was with Washington, he got after Dallas. So DeSean Jackson expected to be back within the next 2 weeks. We'll see if he plays this Sunday against Minnesota. If not, he will probably be back against the Cowboys in 2 weeks. As for another explosive weapon on the offense, Darren Sproles is week to week now, so his injury sounds a little bit more serious. You never want to see a guy injured, Gino, but I am kind of excited to see what Corey Clement can do now in this RB3 role that he was in during the 2017 Super Bowl run. He has big playability. He has a bigger catch radius than Sproles. To me, he's a better in-between-the-tackles runner. I think he's just as good as a pass blocker. They're going to really run mostly Howard and Sanders, but I'm kind of excited to see Clement on the field. I mean, this was a Super Bowl, just from like a fan perspective too, this was a Super Bowl hero that had a sizable role last year that was getting better as the year went on, then gets injured and then comes in, and it's kind of weird. He's now, you know, buried on the bench. He can't really get in on offense. He hasn't had an offensive snap since week one. So, you know, it sucks to have Sproles go down. You always want a player like that at your disposal, but I am kind of excited for Clement's opportunity.
Without a doubt, and Doug reassured him today in his press conference that he would still take on that return responsibility, even though I do think they should try and get Aguilar in that regard. I like what he does. His shiftiness can actually...
I do too, yeah.
He has a playmaking ability in the return game, which is something that,
well, and he did
he
that
struggles
at USC
to do on offense. Yeah, and that was the big thing when he was coming out, that they said he would have added return ability. I remember hearing that all the time during draft season. And he really hasn't shown it, but now he has the opportunity. But with Corey, I think if you give him some handoffs and get him involved in this game plan, even whether you try to get him involved in the passing game at all, but at least give him some carries to regain his confidence. You could just see the look on his face. Like he hasn't had many things going right for him the past two seasons. He was starting to get it going last year. He gets injured. The beginning of this year, he's injured a little bit. He was in a sling for about a week. And now he's back and he's just down on the depth chart. Get him involved and get him some confidence, because they clearly know his ability. He's on the team for a reason. Not many teams keep four running backs, and the Eagles did that when they have one that they drafted in the second round, one that they traded a draft pick for, and one that they clearly wanted back in their building in Darren Sproles. Clement was the odd man out in all regards, but now you have a chance to get him back involved, and you saw what he did in that Super Bowl year. He still has that ability. Just scheme him up some plays and get him involved and give him 3 to 4 snaps a game, if not more than that. I'm totally fine with it. Before the season, we were saying giving him, what, between 4 to 6 touches a game, which would be fine with me. Yeah. I mean, get him involved. Be the changeup pitch, which we talked about prior to the season, because I fully believe he can still do that, and just get the kid confidence, because when he is cooking, and you saw that in that slight portion last year when he was starting to get hot before he went down with that injury, he has explosiveness. He can get to the second level and make plays. There's a reason he's a returner, and there's a reason they kept him on this roster, and they just have to get it out of him. And I fully believe these next couple weeks are the time to do it with Darren Sproles out.
Yeah, and look, Darren Sproles is a fringe Hall of Fame level talent for sure. Don't get me wrong. We have always said that about Sproles. With Clement, though, the thing is, I mean, and this is a young guy. He's only in his third year. You know, he's somebody that can do, to me, everything that Sproles can. I would even be interested if DeSean Jackson doesn't come back this week, they're still going to need explosive playmakers, field stretchers, and to be honest, their biggest field stretcher over the past month has been a running back in Miles Sanders, so I would even be intrigued, hey, maybe sometimes you have Howard and Clement out there at the same time, or Clement and, you know, Miles Sanders on a third down, third and three, where you have the ability to run with either one, maybe some option-type stuff, or they both can spread out in the passing game and be a mismatch against, I mean, we saw yesterday with Sanders, a mismatch against a defensive end. So that is a huge benefit for the offense. But the thing is, too, you know, he can shed tackles. Darren Sproles, it's just when a guy gets his hands on him, for the most part, it's hard for Sproles to escape. Where Clement, you see, he is a hard-nosed runner in between the tackles. When he was coming out of Wisconsin, that's actually what we thought he was. Nobody imagined he was going to be a receiving running back. That wasn't, at least I remember, coming out of Wisconsin.
He had like 20 catches his entire career.
Right. So that was more so supposed to be Donnell Pumphrey when they drafted him in the fourth round, and Clement ends up surprisingly taking over that role. So I'm really excited for his opportunity. You saw it in 2017, you know, that incredible red zone catch on Monday Night Football against Washington. Of course, in the Super Bowl, the guy had 100 receiving yards. So this is a guy that can play. He's only in year three, and it's not going to be something where they rely on him to be the lead back. I think in this RB3 role, where the Eagles have more so featured two running backs this season, for the most part, outside of week one, I think he should be able to step in admirably. And like you said, the confidence thing, you can get his confidence back up. You know, that punt return yesterday, honestly, I don't blame him for that. I don't know what you saw, but I thought that
I thought it hit Ryan Lewis.
He was heading for the hills because that football was tracking him down. And it, to me, of course, it's easier from Clement's perspective. I thought it hit his heel. So I initially thought, what was Clement doing there? But I honestly thought it actually was the smart approach, because that ball would have kept rolling and the Jets might have had the ball at the, you know, the 10-yard line.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too. I mean, you could see he was distraught after that, and that was his one opportunity to step up, seeing that he hasn't gotten any touches on offense. So, yeah, you really feel for him. But now is the time to unleash him, and that's the great thing that we talked about before the season, is that they had so many chess pieces. This is a chess piece that you will have no film of how he is used this year. You can absolutely get more out of him than a lot of guys you have, because you know Miles Sanders is going to be your passing option. Doug declared that today. You know Jordan Howard is going to be your guy that's going to take the handoffs. Doug Peterson said that today. But Corey Clement, he's a huge question mark. You don't know what he's going to do if he's in the game. Get him on the field. I want to see him. I've been chomping at the bit to see him get carries. I said maybe 15 times out loud yesterday, I do not want to see Darren Sproles in this game anymore. And until he was injured, I was going to continue to say it as long as they gave him the ball, because he was doing nothing productive.
So inefficient.
And his efficiency this year has been dreadful.
It's been
so
terrible.
Now it's time to give the ball to somebody else and let Corey Clement at least do something. Just don't continue to feed Darren Sproles when he was doing nothing productive. Let Jordan take the handoffs. Let Miles create separation in the pass game, be your most efficient downfield threat currently, and let Corey Clement be that changeup pitch.
I agree. Yeah, Sproles has been very inefficient this year. Some of it's on him, and again, some of it is the complacency with play calling when he's out there. And Clement, look, he was perfect for this role that he's going to be in next week, and, you know, it seems like for the coming weeks. 2017, they ran LeGarrette Blount and Jay Ajayi, and Clement was RB3. Now you have Jordan Howard, Miles Sanders, Clement's RB3 again. To me, he's in the role now that he should be in, the role that I think me and you both, right, wanted him to be in the offseason before they brought back Sproles at the last minute.
Yeah, that's exactly what I wanted him to be. And now that Darren is out of the equation, you have that three-headed committee that we thought before they re-signed Darren Sproles would be the three that they took and maybe bring Boston Scott onto the roster. But I'm excited to see it. I really like that Doug is firm in establishing that Jordan will be the guy on the ground, because you can look at the numbers. You can look at the efficiency ratings. Jordan Howard is better taking handoffs than Miles Sanders is. But the good thing about Miles Sanders, which many people didn't expect coming out of college, is he is now this unbelievable passing weapon, which I want to see him in the pass game more. And you said it, Lou, these mismatches that they create with him are something that the Eagles are going to continue to expose.
Yeah, in the NFL, you see it around the league with the likes of Christian McCaffrey, Alvin Kamara, Dalvin Cook. This is much like pass-catching tight ends. It is a trend in the NFL that is becoming a dangerous weapon for offenses. And we'll get more into the running backs, I'm sure, coming up. It's stock up, stock down. We are going to take one quick break right here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. When we come back, we'll get into the positives of yesterday's 31-6 win. I mean, there was a lot of them considering they won 31-6. So stock up, stock down coming up next right here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. Louis DiBiase and Gino Camilleri joining you. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Today's Locked On Eagles podcast is sponsored by Roman. Most guys have tried different ways to last longer, but saying the Pledge of Allegiance in your head or counting backwards from 10 doesn't always work. The folks at Roman, a men's health company, are changing the game with Roman Swipes, the secret to longer lasting sex. Roman Swipes are a clinically proven way to last longer in bed. They're effective, easy to use, and fast acting, but don't require a prescription. Roman can ship swipes to you in a discreet, unmarked packaging, and each swipes packet is small enough to hide in your wallet for whenever you need it. Swipes are great. They will not transfer to your partner, so you can last longer without worrying. They're super easy to use. Just take swipes out of the packet, swipe it on, let it dry, and you're good to go. That's it. Get $10 off your first order of swipes and free two-day shipping at GetRoman.com/LockedOnNFL. That's GetRoman.com/LockedOnNFL for $10 off and free two-day shipping.
All right, everybody, this is the Locked On Eagles podcast. Thank you for joining us on this Monday edition of the show, continuing to recap the Eagles' blowout win over the New York Jets yesterday at Lincoln Financial Field, 31-6. We're going to start it up with our flagship show of the week, and it's stock up, stock down. Gino, stock up. I'm going to start with me. Teddy Bridgewater was great yesterday. Jared Goff and Dak Prescott weren't worth their money. Rasul Douglas has been the best cornerback on the Eagles. Miles Sanders is a stud in the passing game, and we nailed Brian Burns, who's in. Look, don't ignore the Chase Winovich hate from me last year. Ignore it, because he's been great, but I'm going to toot my own horn. I'm feeling good after this week.
Wow, what an unbelievably selfish thing to say, but no,
I had
man.
To go for it.
You had a hell of a day yesterday. Rasul Douglas is all of a sudden CB1. He's just a lockdown corner for us now. Brian Burns, man, we hit on that. And
we both picked him to win Defensive Rookie of the Year, right? I mean, he is going to win it, it seems like.
Oh, without a doubt. When we get into Giants week again, we need to have a discussion, which I mentioned on Twitter yesterday. And for Eagles fans, I will preface this a little bit. I don't remember exactly where I heard this. Maybe Pro Football Talk or Adam Kett, somebody I was listening. I cannot quote it exactly, but this is not from me. I'll make that clear. But Dave Gettleman wanted to trade up after picking Daniel Jones to the seventh spot to select Josh Allen,
right?
Which Josh Allen right now for the Jags is arguably one of the top five candidates for Defensive Rookie of the Year.
Agreed.
Right near there with Brian Burns, a very good edge rusher, somebody who can get off the edge, has great bend. They miss on him because Jacksonville wanted to take him. So instead of trading up from where they took Dexter Lawrence to select Brian Burns, who is a very good comp to what Josh Allen brings to a defense, i.e. being a very slim edge rusher that has good bend and can get around the corners and has an unreal motor, mm-hmm. sounds like Brian Burns, sounds like Josh Allen, they go ahead and select Dexter Lawrence, who's a zero and a one tech nose tackle, which is the complete opposite of the player that they wanted in Josh Allen.
Yeah.
Why that pick happened is beyond me, because Brian Burns is playing at an unbelievable level right now on that Carolina line, and the plays he are making are just unbelievable. Even that one yesterday, the fumble return, how he made that play is crazy. If you see him come off the edge, he gets chopped at the knees. He has the balance and wherewithal to keep his feet, keeps his eyes on the ball and sees the ball come out, and it just falls into his lap, and he takes it to the house. He's just a freak of nature. Yeah, Lou, hats off to you. You had an unbelievable day yesterday. I'll give it to you.
Not to mention Josh Jacobs and Dalvin Cook are two of the best running backs in football
We'll get into that Dalvin Cook matchup for next
week. Oh, we will, absolutely.
We are concerned about that.
For sure. And speaking of that matchup, the Eagles right now, Gino, are the number one ranked rushing defense in the NFL. They have held guys like Le'Veon Bell in check. I'm drawing a blank. I don't know why. Oh, I mean, who else have they played any other good running? I mean, Kerryon Johnson didn't really do much against them. Aaron Jones really had no answers. The Eagles have been incredible against the run. But to get into the serious part of stock up here, the defensive line blew up yesterday against the pass, too. And we have to start, to me, with Brandon Graham. He finally finished. There has been, and it's really throughout his career, you keep seeing it, and 2017 was the closest. He had 9.5 sacks, but he hasn't really been able to reach 10 sacks or more, despite being one of the most efficient pass rushers over the past, 5 years. Pro Football Focus, he is a Pro Football Focus darling. Yesterday blows up, has a career day with 3 sacks in the game. And, Gino, the biggest part for me, he killed it inside. He had 2 of his 3 sacks on the inside.
You know how much I love when BG rushes from the interior. I tweet it literally every single time he gets a sack when he rushes from the interior or he has a tackle from the loss from the interior, because he filled that Michael Bennett role, like I said yesterday on the show. And, man, that was exactly what we talked about prior to this game. You want the defensive line to get right. And if you saw what they did to that Jets line, you're in for a treat, because when they go against Minnesota next week, a line who is just as bad as the Jets, Kirk Cousins is in for a rude awakening.
Absolutely. Who is a stock up for you on either offense or defense?
I have to go with your boy Rasul Douglas, man.
Sir.
You took praise for it in the first segment there with stock up of yourself, which my mind is still blown that you pulled that rabbit out of a hat. But yeah, man. Rasul Douglas, like, even though you're going against a weak passing offense, what he has evolved into in these past couple weeks is exactly what we wanted to see out of one of these young cornerbacks to assert themselves in one of these question mark positions, which we had. I think our question mark positions for the year were who is going to be the starting outside linebacker, which we now know is Kamu, that he's back healthy. Who's going to be your safety 3, which we now know is Andrew Sendejo. Who's going to be your defensive end 4? Josh Sweat, who had a hell of a day yesterday. Same with Deshaun Hall. Both had great games yesterday. And last question mark, who's going to be your CB2? And right now, who's your CB1? It's Rasul Douglas. He can stay on the field. He's healthy. He's a playmaker. He's all over the football. Should have had a pick 6 yesterday. He's just going to continue to show up in big matchups. And the thing with him at his size and the ability that they had drafting him as this almost hybrid safety / cornerback body type is that you can match him up against guys like TJ Hockenson, like they did a couple weeks ago. You can match him up against receivers, even though not the quick receivers, because you're going to need a little help over the top, but he could still make do if you give him some help. And that's the good thing about him, is he's a guy that's never going to give up on a play. He's a hard-nosed kid. He tackles well. He's exactly what Jim Schwartz wants in his cornerbacks. And the way he plays just reminds me, not like that they have a similar playing style, but like when Jim Schwartz used to have Cortland Finnegan and just the guy that he could get in the face of receivers. And like, that's what Rasul Douglas can do when he gets his hands on guys. He's a big boy. Like, he could push some receivers around. And that's what we talk about all the time with Rasul, is get him at the line and let him get his hands on receivers. And I think they just have to continue to do that and just continue to grow Rasul's just his trust in himself, which he's playing at a great level right now, and I cannot complain with what I have been seeing out of Rasul.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he gets better every year. From 2017, last year, he was playing some really damn good football from weeks 12 on, and he had that hiccup week 1 against Terry McLaurin. I think he was put in a bad spot, but again, that's his weak point, is going up against guys like that, especially with no safety help. But since then, you mentioned TJ Hockenson. He can line up against those bigger tight ends. He can go up against a Julio Jones. So Rasul has been, and we like to compliment Jalen Mills about his red zone work and his ability to tackle. Rasul Douglas is that, only he has ball skills that he has instincts. To me, Jalen Mills just doesn't possess. So absolutely, Rasul Douglas has been their top corner. You mentioned in that another guy here that's stock up while you were talking about Rasul. You mentioned Josh Sweat. To me, he's been breaking out this year, not at like a huge level where he's getting sack after sack, but Geno, I feel like he's been making at least a few big plays each game. He had a couple clean rushes to Matt Ryan on Sunday Night Football. He was pressuring Aaron Rodgers consistently last week. He blew up a run play on Aaron Jones that game. He had a sack yesterday versus the Jets. To me, he's playing better than Vinny Curry. And, you know, seeing boosts from guys like him and Deshaun Hall, they're huge for this team without their defensive tackles. The Eagles have been used, really, they've been used to four consistent pass rushers throughout the years, and without Malik Jackson, having these guys step up is big, and especially when Sweat plays inside, or his pressure on the outside has allowed Graham to move inside when Curry is off the field, and having guys produce inside is allowing Fletcher Cox to get freed up a little bit more, too.
Yeah, I love what Josh Sweat is doing. He's one of my favorite draft picks of the last couple years, because he just had that raw, natural body frame that you want in edge rushers. He's 6'4", arms that reach the ground, and he finally grew into his frame this year. And he really, I don't even think my favorite play of yesterday you mentioned, the one play when he trailed the running back from the backside and just made his way down the line of scrimmage, they pulled the tackle, so he just had a free rush to the backside to get, I think it was Le'Veon Bell that was carrying the ball, mm-hmm. and he just tracked him down the line, ran down Le'Veon Bell, and tackled him. And that was, I saw that, I was like, wow, that is a Joshua play that he needed to make, and he needed to evolve into that run stuffing guy, because that was with his frame being at what, 225 or 230 last year, he couldn't be a component in the run game. Now he's not a liability there, and whoever they put into that spot as that DE4, regardless if it's Vinny Curry or Deshaun Hall, all of those guys are pretty good in the run game. Like, they can hold their own. And they don't have liabilities, guys that you can't put in there on third downs in case there is a run. Because Josh Sweat makes plays on the run game. Deshaun Hall made some plays on the run game. Vinny Curry continues to make plays in run games. Akeem Spence was even making plays yesterday. We haven't even mentioned him and given him some love since he came into this Eagles team and was off the street again and has just hopped into a DT3 role and played pretty well. He's made some plays and just has gone under the radar. And that entire front, just hats off to them. And I'm going to own up and just quick stock up here. Nate Geary, he's done it this season. Two big plays. He's done pretty good.
Interceptions in back-to-back weeks.
It's pretty good.
That's pretty good. One more
No,
here.
He didn't have one last week.
Yeah, that was, Green Bay.
That was Atlanta. He had one week two.
Oh, you're right. I'm thinking. Yes. Yeah, in the end zone, right?
Yes.
Okay.
But Bradham had one last week in the end zone.
Yeah.
Easy mistake.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So he does have two picks this year, but yes, that's right.
He does. And those are big ones, too.
Yeah, that's right. Nate Geary, stock up. I think one more here to wrap up. We were talking about the running back segment one. I just want to give a little bit more love to Jordan Howard and Miles Sanders. And Howard specifically, you know, he averaged over 4.5 yards yet again. To me, he's a more efficient LeGarrette Blount. Which I guess actually really is what that's Jay Ajayi essentially. So Peterson.
Yeah, I don't see much trade off between those two running styles, honestly.
Yeah. So I mean, and he runs really hard. He's been breaking tackles this year. To me, this is my view on it. Doug Peterson should give him more carries, especially when he's rolling. I still want snaps split, and if not in favor of Miles Sanders, mostly because of Sanders' explosive ability, specifically in the passing game. He's on pace for almost 400 yards receiving this year, and he has been great in pass blocking. Brian Baldinger did a breakdown today of Sanders just putting a corner on his back from a corner blitz to the point where Jason Peters felt bad for the guy and helped him up. So I love Sanders, want him on the field more than Howard from a snap count perspective. Love this Kamara Ingram kind of feel to it. Both great pass blockers. But to me, from a carry perspective, when you have Howard running as efficient as he has, you got to keep churning that, keep working that. Don't rotate from a running game perspective just for the sake of rotating.
Yeah, yesterday, when they just threw Darren Sproles in there out of the blue, it was just like, what is happening? Why wasn't Howard just continually fed the ball? He has just been so efficient the last two games. And when he works better when he gets in a rhythm. Like, you can just see him working up to an explosive run, and you've seen it the last couple weeks. He's just due.
That's how it works with committees. Like, rhythm, players, the more they go, the better they're going to get.
Absolutely. I mean, I like the idea of the committee because they all present good skill sets. It's just using them the right way. And I am so happy that Doug went out of his way to make note of that, because, I mean, if that was a Deuce thing and Deuce just continued to pound that into the ground and Doug is putting that to rest, hats off to Doug. But if it's Doug being self-aware to do that and to just continue to feed Howard on the ground and feed Miles in the air, then hats off to him as well. But acknowledging that those two are your most efficient running backs right now is key for this Eagles team to succeed, because that's how they've won the last 2 weeks, Lou. Like, believe it or not, true, Carson Wentz hasn't thrown over 200 yards the past two games combined. That running game has won them the last two games.
And look, I'm a featured back guy, but it's more so when they're not one-dimensional. So I get Doug Peterson wanting to keep it split until Miles Sanders is ready to take over that backfield. But still, again, like you said, get a guy in a rhythm when he is churning out these big runs consistently like Jordan Howard has. When you decide to run the football, you got to keep him out there, at least from a committee perspective, because I'm anti-committee, but at least they have really kind of narrowed it down to these two, right? Whereas the past couple of years, they've rotated sometimes three, four players, where now I'm glad that they realize, okay, there's this thunder and lightning dynamic here, and we're going to keep working that. So I like the way they've done it outside of week one, the overusage of Sproles and the random times they put him in there situationally. That just doesn't make any sense. But for the most part, I think Jordan Howard and Miles Sanders have blown us away, and it's just such a nice change of pace compared to last year having to watch Wendell Smallwood. I mean, I appreciate these two so much more after that 2018 season. We got to take another quick break here on the Locked On Eagles podcast, sponsored today by Vivid Seats. Guys, make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let the Vivid Seats app help you get to your favorite live event. Enter the promo code today, kickoff, at checkout to receive a discount of up to $100. Coming up next, we got Stock Down. This is the Monday edition of Locked On Eagles, Louis DiBiase and Gino Camilleri. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. All right, everybody. We are wrapping up this Monday edition of Locked On Eagles. Stock down time, Gino. Let's get into some negatives. And I think the one we got to kick off with, and it's not even a player, but it's discipline. The Eagles had 9 penalties of 76 yards yesterday. They had a few drops once again. They lead the league in drops. I mean, a couple people like to criticize Carson Wentz for some reason over the last two games, over his completion percentage and over some of the errors of the offense. For me, like, what do you want Carson Wentz to do? Stop the offensive line from making these penalties? Catch the football for his guys? His adjusted completion percentage is at 66.1 right now. So unless you want him to be this healer that can bring DeSean Jackson back 100% and Alshon Jeffrey, it's more so the offensive line's got to stop making these boneheaded mistakes. The receiver's got to start catching the football. And also from a defensive perspective, I mean, you know, Derek Barnett has 3 personal fouls. So Doug Peterson was clearly frustrated after the game about the mental mistakes, because this is a veteran team. It's the second oldest team in the NFL behind the New England Patriots. So they should not be making these mistakes consistently week after week. I mean, you tweet it all the time. They keep shooting themselves in the foot.
I say it every single week. It's just continued drive killers, whether it's a Miles Sanders fumble or that first week, the very first week with DeSean Jackson, when he got in that little scuffle with who was that at corner? I can't even remember for the skin.
Yeah, I forget.
But yeah, that was a 15-yard personal foul. Takes him out of the first down. It's just they continue to do it every single week. Doug made mention of it today. It's like Darren Sproles on that chop block. It went from a second and manageable to a first and 25.
Yep.
It's like you can't continue to do that, especially when you're getting great field position. I mean, how many times did they start between the 40s yesterday? The last 2 weeks even, they just continue to do that. They have great field position. It's just we talk about this efficiency, just continued efficiency and not taking penalties is going to prove to be continual, to give you continual success against good teams. Because if you continue to do this against Minnesota, against Dallas, you're not going to be able to continue to beat these good teams. And they just have to stop doing it, especially guys like Derek Barnett. Just stupid little things. Just, I mean, you could get ticky-tack with holding calls on offensive linemen, but personal fouls are just idiotic. Just hands to the face and some of the stupid ones that they get. They just got to be more disciplined. And they're a disciplined team, and I believe their leadership will continue to hold each other accountable, because even Doug said it today in his presser that they have to be more accountable in that regard.
Yeah, and to me, the offense has been the better unit this year, so I'm not really concerned. That's probably why Doug Peterson was even more frustrated yesterday, is because they have moved the ball super well this year, despite the injuries and despite the inefficiencies of the mental mistakes. So that's why it is frustrating, because like you said, I mean, these are veteran guys that have been doing it for a long time. But at the same time, that's why I'm confident that they will work through this. This isn't a Cleveland Browns team that their entire starting lineup on offense and defense are guys that are below the age of 30. So I think they will get it corrected, but it has been something. It's been probably one of the biggest negatives of the start of this Eagles 2019 season through 5 weeks. Is there any other stock down? Is there a player that you were disappointed in yesterday?
I mean, I've just continued to be disappointed in this player for the past couple weeks, and it's Nelson Agholor, man. Like, he has to show up at some point. That one when he got held by Tremaine Johnson, he definitely could have done a better job tracking that ball, like, without a doubt. I continue to hear that he is this downfield threat. I just don't see it. Like,
well, he was last year.
Lou.
He was atop the league in 30-plus yard plays throughout, like, the first 10 weeks of the season.
I mean, but what have you done for me recently? Like,
no,
are you
I know. He, but
you know,
at
like,
the same time,
I don't
like,
have
he
trust
got,
in him at all. Like,
he
I don't
got
have
ran between
even on
two
the
guys.
One ball that he got yesterday, he had it punched out of his arms. Like, lucky he was along the sideline, because that would have been another fumble that he had.
No, I'm not going to give him a pass for his inconsistencies, for sure. I just think on that play specifically down the field, like, yeah, DeSean Jackson is tracking the ball. I've never seen a receiver better than DeSean Jackson.
Sure.
He probably he catches that football and it's a touchdown. The one thing I think that's a touchdown, too, though, if Agholor doesn't just get bodied by Tremaine Johnson and it kind of throws him off his spot a little bit, he does need to do better of switching sides of his body as a receiver. I mean, that's something they teach you really early on to try to get that to be a strength of yours, because it is hard to do that. But I mean, again, I won't give him a pass. You certainly want to see him utilized more down the field, because I think that's what happened even last year. And again, a lot of it's on Agholor. There's been some key drops. Even last year, I remember that game against Tennessee. Wentz put it on the money. It should have been like a 50-yard touchdown, and he dropped the football. But there are some times, too, where he's not really used in that way. And I feel like, you know, a lot the beginning of last year and so far this year, again, he's had the opportunities against Atlanta yesterday twice. But I feel like they need to use him more in that way. I don't remember seeing him down the field a whole lot, running routes down there.
I mean, we're going to have to look at the tape tomorrow.
Yeah, that's why when the
All-22
comes back, we'll get a better idea.
But I just, there comes a point when a guy who's now in his fifth year, he just is not making plays of where he was drafted. The guy was a first round pick.
Yeah, like, from that perspective, I agree. I agree for you, a first
do you see
round
what
pick.
I'm saying?
Yes.
Like,
yeah, no,
you are a first round pick. You're a guy that this offense has had to rely on, especially in a spot which you have been in the past 2 years, not having your downfield threat. And it's like, how many games is it going to take to get him involved? It's either one, he just doesn't have the pure athletic ability to get downfield, or two, they're just not scheming him right. We'll see when we look at the tape tomorrow, but I tweeted it today. If Howie Roseman is feeling happy, give Joe Douglas a call and see what it'll take to pry Robbie Anderson, because I'd much rather see Robbie Anderson and Nelson Agholor's role right about now than I do trusting Nelson at all, because what he has done the last couple weeks has just completely reverted me to what we saw in 2016. And
yeah,
it's just one of those things I didn't want to see happen, but it's here. I mean, I just continue to be disappointed by him. Like, those games when he needs to step up, he just doesn't do it. Like, that would have been huge, even just for the offense to get it going, you know? Like, that play would have been huge just to get a spark under them, and you just didn't see it in that catch against Atlanta. And just here we are again just criticizing Nelson Agholor. And I don't know if I'm too hard on him, but it's just how I see the guy. Just I can't see them paying him after this year, honestly.
I mean, I just can't see it. The problem with, to me, I can see it because your guy, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, I mean, look, like, to me, he stocked down too.
He's played three games, dude.
But the problem is, for me, when you have DeSean Jackson hurt, and look, again, I agree. Like, rookie wide receivers take longer for sure. But for me, I thought he was a guy coming out that wasn't as much a work in progress as some of these other receivers. So he's a field stretcher. He was at Stanford, and not in a speed type of way, but more in an Alshon type of way. But with DeSean hurt, with Alshon Jeffrey not 100%, with Agholor's inconsistencies, you hope you'd at least get some, again, I understand that he's only played a couple games, but you hope you'd get something out of your other second-round pick to make plays down the field, considering they have not been able to stretch the field because of injuries and drops by Agholor and inconsistencies. Instead, they've had to play Mac Hollins. So, like, I understand, but for me, like, he's been as disappointing as Nelson Agholor. And sure, he's a rookie, so Agholor shouldn't get as much of a pass. But
two different lenses to look at that.
Both of those guys, to me, I'm very disappointed that they have not gotten more out of them while DeSean Jackson and Alshon Jeffrey have been battling injuries. they, to me, both of them should have stepped up more than they have.
I'm not going to just sit here with a blind lens and say that JJ has done anything productive for this team, because he hasn't. And he actually basically lost them a game not catching that one pass. But, yeah, I just feel like they have to do a better job scheming what they have to get open downfield, because it's going to just continue to go back to what we saw this offense do last year when they couldn't take the top off. And I think we saw it a lot yesterday. You're starting to see Zach Ertz find these open reads in these zones, because that's what they're going to continue to play against the Eagles if they can't stretch the field. It's just what happens when Deshaun isn't there. What happens when Mike Wallace wasn't there last year? We saw it with Torrey Smith. If they have that recurring downfield element on the field, this offense will be electric. They just have to get it there, and hopefully Deshaun can get back healthy. If not, they have to do something different scheming these guys open downfield.
Yeah, scheming these guys open, or maybe, like you said, a Robbie Anderson type of player. I mean, I don't know. Maybe you convince Torrey Smith to come out of retirement, or Mike Wallace is kind of... Yeah, I mean, Mike Wallace has been MIA. He hasn't even had a workout from any NFL teams this year, so... You know, you would hope they, because they have the personnel to do it. Even Mac Hollins has made plays down the field. He did it at UNC. He did it in 2017. Remember that deep bomb on Monday Night Football against Washington? So, yeah, hopefully you can scheme it up more. Hopefully you get more out of those three, the other three not named, Alshon Jeffrey and Deshaun Jackson this season, if Deshaun can't come back 100%. But I think maybe the fix is, though, Jackson comes back in the next 2 weeks, and we're not really as concerned. That's going to do it. For sure, 100%. That's going to do it for today's edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast. Thank you for joining Gino and I on today's edition of the show. We've got one more podcast tomorrow before we have Crossover Wednesday, and we move on to Minnesota Vikings Week right here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. The conversation always continues on Twitter, at Locked On Birds, at DiBiase, L-O-E, and at Gino _ L-O-E. And you can always subscribe to the show, 4 to 6 podcasts a week on any podcast provider or on LockedOnEagles.com. For Gino Camilleri, I'm Louis DiBiase signing off. As always, thank you for downloading, thank you for listening, and let's go Birds.
Fly, Eagles, fly.